Hey everybody, Kevin Purcell with the Field Tech Podcast, and this morning we are excited to have all three of us here today, Wes Allen and Antoine Wright, and we're going to talk about very different topics. We don't have just one specific thing we want to hit today, but we want to jump right in, and before we started this morning, we were talking about the blue dress, and no, we're not talking about Monica Lewinsky from the 90s, I want to know, Wes, did you see the thing that hit the internet last night? This was one of those amazing things that just kind of took over the internet, and everybody was talking about it on Twitter and Facebook and everything, and that is this crazy blue dress. Is it blue or is it white?
Yeah, I did see that. It was really interesting, and I saw a couple of explanations on it this morning. I mean, you have the article that has it side by side. I know you don't want to get a philosophical conversation, but I am fascinated by this picture.
Yeah, but you haven't answered the question. Here's the original right here.
Well, I know what it is. I originally saw blue because I saw the one that's on the image that's on the right, and then I went back and I looked later, and I saw it slightly differently, but it's that highlight in the background just changes your perception of the photo. Some people are seeing like pink and blue. It's really bizarre.
Yeah, my wife is certain that this thing is gold and white, and she was absolutely stunned that I thought it was blue and black. How about you, Antoine? Is it blue or is it white?
It's actually, I would argue it's neither. The highlights are way too overblown. It's not a good picture. Why would that even become a scientific experiment? That's really stupid.
Here's the original.
I'm sorry. Well,
the reason why is because they didn't do any corrections on it to do the highlights. It's a bad picture, and when they took they were seeing this being different than what it actually is, and so that's why it's become interesting.
I used to work for a photographer, so like when I see stuff, and I see a picture like this, it's already, all right, this is an error of a picture, we're tossing it, or somebody did some crazy Instagram thing once again, and it's a hot mess, that's right. Why it's getting this attention. This wouldn't even get my time of day.
Better than the dress
on it or anything. I mean, that's the whole thing. What's interesting to people, Antoine, is that there's no filters on it at all. Like, somebody took a bad picture.
Well, no, it's just the highlights.
And they looked at it, and they went, yes. Why does this blue dress look white and gold? And that's what made it interesting to them. And for people who don't know photography, they're beginning to see how our perception of light is not often reality. That's the only thing that makes it interesting. It is obviously a terrible photograph.
What's great is the review. It's actually a dress that's for sale on Amazon. And I don't know if you saw the reviews, but someone said, this is in the review of the product, it said, it gave it 5 stars, but then it said, this is a glitch in the Matrix. I thought that was funny. Well, listen, we're not about blue dresses or white dresses here at Theotech. I just thought that was funny, and so it's kind of blown up on the internet, and so I thought I'd bring it up this morning. But what we really want to talk about is, Wes, you had an article you had sort of fancy got your attention about social media policy. Explain what's going on there and what the article was about and why it's so interesting to you.
Yeah, well, let me bring it up here quick. I'm going to bring it up on the screen. Now, this kind of speaks to me, and I immediately thought of Antoine because of the way that he takes notes at meetings. So that's kind of what it come on. This reminds me of that completely. Are you seeing it, guys?
Yeah, okay. This is something different. Go ahead with this.
Oh, okay. What were you talking about?
Don't worry about it. Just go with this. I was...
I'm sorry. My brain is not listening. I only had one cup of coffee.
This is something different. We'll talk about this first. This is
okay, cool. Because I think this is really cool.
Tell us what we're seeing here.
Well, this is a way a pastor actually creates his notes for his sermons, and this is what he uses to preach from. And for me, I'm looking at this because, yeah, I totally understand what he's doing here. I know a lot of people who might be like more along the engineering linear thinking concept are probably freaking out looking at this. But the pastor who preaches this apparently has got a very artistic mindset, you know, thinks visually, and so when he wants to create his thing, his sermon notes, and point out what his main points are going to be, this is what he does, and I absolutely love this.
So you said,
Anton,
you
what do you think?
What's going on here? You understand this? This makes
pretty
sense.
Pretty much, yeah.
Like, could you get up, maybe not give it justice, but could you, if you were forced to, get up and preach this sermon right now?
Yeah, I think I could.
Well, I look at this, and it's just like someone used earlier about the blue dress. It's just a hot mess. I mean, it's interesting, but I have no clue what's going on here.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is, he's so all talking it. About, it's all about Jesus going up to the temple as a tween. I mean, he's trying to talk about where... A point in the story of Jesus that we don't often spend a whole lot of attention on, his going up to the temple and then staying behind is what I was kind of looking at, and he's, you know, he wants to point out that there are external stories that are not in the Gospels, that are not in the canonical tales of Jesus as a child. They come from other things, and he mentions all those non-canonicals. He says they're legends and things like that. And I just think this is really kind of cool. Yeah, and it's when he's 12 years old, so he's going up
more
to...
than literal
what's
text.
That, Anton? What's that?
Well, people learn with pictures. Much of the movement of the church, and you know, between 1200 and you know, circa 1700, was to teach with pictures, because folks were really illiterate when it came to matters of the scripture. It was a lot easier to tell the story with pictures. He's
well, it came
doing
and it
what the church has always done
earlier than that. Yeah. So
yeah,
I think this is really cool. So he's talking about him being this 12-year-old Jew going up to the temple for the Passover, and this was a normal thing, and he has the distance between Nazareth and Jerusalem, which explains why his parents were, you know, walking back to Nazareth, and they had to turn around and go back a full day. It's really kind of fascinating. There's some things that I would have put in here that he doesn't. The idea that it's a three-day search, they went out one day and spent the night. They came back the second day and spent the night and found Jesus on the third day. And you know, you have a thing of Jesus kind of going missing for 3 days over Passover in Jerusalem. There's a huge allusion to his death and resurrection. So there's certain things that are going on there that I would have liked to bring out. But I like this, and you can see in the bottom, and who is Jesus? The nature of revelation. He's trying to interact with the canonical stories and these non-canonical stories, why maybe some, I would assume that some things are, he's explaining why some things come in and some in these other things didn't. And I love this. This is how I took notes in college, although I'm not artistic. Mine are basically boxes and lines all connecting to each other. My own form
well,
of
Antoine, mind. You are very artistic, so I'd like to, you know, what do you think of this? And I'd like your reaction.
Well, first reaction when I looked at the story this morning, and I said, oh, cool, mainstream Baptist news has caught on to sketch notes. Neat. All right, cool. That's really, that was my first reaction. You know, there's this really cool niche, you know, note-taking culture. You know, there's the markdown culture, the folks that like to use markdown. There's, the GTD folks that like to use GTD. And then there's the folks that like to sketch and... here in Charlotte, you know, the kind of the side of the evangelical community that, you know, more equated with Morningstar and a few churches of their ilk, they literally do painting and what have you during praise and worship. So I don't see it as too far removed. I think it's neat that, you know, this particular pastor's approach has been seen by, you know, a media stream. It makes sense. Kind of as, you know, Wes was alluding to earlier, you know, pictures allow people to make connections that are not always as easily made when you are looking at a rote outline or you're just listening to, you know, a linear set of points. Pictures just do something different to us between the colors, the spacing on the page, the energy in the letters, and, you know, there's emotion in his letters. You know, he wanted you to focus more on Jesus. Mm-hmm. That's why he's got the block capital letters here. He wants you to get the idea of distance. That's why you got the star with the dot, 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 60 miles going to it. I mean, there are things that you can convey in a drawing or in a painting or in a PowerPoint with pictures. Pictures have 1,000 words, you know, and words just have one word kind of moment. So I think this is really good in terms of, you know, from a media perspective, a few more folks paying attention.
So Antoine, take this digital for us. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but take this digital for us. And, you know, this guy is using it's definitely not digital because he has an 18 by 24 inch page that he's bringing, and it's watercolors and things. But I think you do a lot of this on your tablet, don't you?
I do. I prefer, at least at this juncture in my life, to embrace the tablet as a canvas. Everyone has their own, I guess, idea of a canvas. A lot of the folks that I know that do sketchnoting, they use Moleskin handbooks. Very few folks I know go my route and use a digital canvas. And I prefer to use a digital canvas because the light is reversed. You know, when you're painting, when you're drawing on paper, you're dealing with ambient light. And so you, in a lot of respects, you deal with what we talked about with the blue dress. You deal with what people can see. You know, you're not telling them what is here. When you're dealing with a digital canvas, it's a light from surface. John Dyer did a really neat piece on tablets in churches and why that idea of light coming from a device is a lot different than light reflecting off of paper, and that's what tosses our heads. This idea of you're not dealing with light, but you're pushing light around when you're dealing with a tablet. It's a different emotive experience there.
Well, I thought this was interesting.
I'm sorry, Kev. Go ahead.
At all, it would not work for me because I'm a linear thinker, and so you know now. But I do. My notes do have color in that. You know, my main points. I used to just use big font, but then I started thinking, wow, you know, why don't we? He's showing his digital notes there. I use color in my Word document. Like my quotes are all big print red, and my main points are big print green, and you know, so that helps me. But and I think that digital allows you to do some of that.
Well, you're talking about typography, which exactly. You know, it's similar to you, but not the same.
No, it's not
typography.
That was my point.
You know,
this would drive me nuts, and it wouldn't help me. I'd be like, what is this? And you know, he talked about line mapping, which is less artistic and more geometric usually, normally, and so I could see that possibly working in my brain, but. Those actually are beautiful.
I used to share my notes with people in college, and their brains would explode. They would just look at it and be like, how do you even get this? I'm like, well, just follow the arrows around, and it goes through, and it looks like a flow chart. It was kind of cool. But the picture Antoine does there and what the picture of the pastor's notes are exactly why I use presentation software the way that I do. It's all pictures. To try to link what I'm saying with the pictures. So what I do with Keynote is the reverse of what that pastor does with his sketch notes, which is why it appeals to me.
Well, so what do your notes look like, Wes?
My notes are kind of all over the place. I write in Markdown, and so I have the things that go all the way down, but I tend to write narrative style, so I'm creating a mental picture when I write. So because I don't have artistic talent. I mean, I can't do what Antoine does or what this other pastor does. I don't have the manual dexterity for it. I would do it this way if I could. And so what I end up doing is the way I describe it is when I'm writing notes or when I'm writing my manuscript, I'm trying to write the story of my sermon. And so I'm creating mental pictures as I go through it or as I'm writing my notes on the scripture and things like that. So it's not, it looks linear, but in my mind, it's actually a much more expansive canvas. And then, so when I get to my, and I'm actually going to do that after the podcast today, when I get to the point of making the presentation, I kind of know how this is going to look in my head. And then I'll go and find the images to kind of plug into my mental picture.
Oh, see, yeah, that's actually a good question.
I'm sorry, guys. We're looking on screen at Antoine's Flickr album of his, the notes that he has. And for my first reaction to it is, first of all, you're using bamboo paper, right?
No.
Oh, okay. It looks just like
Adobe Ideas and paper are my applications of choice.
Well, paper, that's what I mean. Bamboo paper is the app, right? Paper from Bamboo?
No, sir.
No, by 53.
Paper by 53.
Oh, I'm sorry, but they bought it, didn't they?
No.
No, they're still separate.
Tell me to shut up, I'm
the
sorry.
The guy from 53, Microsoft's courier team.
Is it Pages by 53, then?
No, it's paper.
No.
Okay, all right. I don't use it, so I don't.
They actually came out with a stylus too.
Yeah, bamboo paper actually has a little glitch in it when you're drawing. It's not as smooth as those two other two apps I mentioned.
Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. I don't use them, and so that's in my mind. That's I'm recalling from over a year ago, mm-hmm. and I've cut too many times since then. So, but these are beautiful. My second reaction was these are beautiful. I think that some of these. Our artwork all to themselves. I could see you share. Do you share these with your audience? Do you tell people, hey, if you want to see my notes later?
Awesome! Always. The point of them. I mean, it's for me to help me remember when I'm at a sermon. But there's one group I go to called Unplugged. Where literally speaking, I was going for weeks on end and just sharing my notes. And the pastor over that ministry, whenever he would disseminate the sermon, he'd always disseminate my sketch notes along with it afterwards. Hmm. And it was something that helped build that community, especially for his digital audience, his online audience, who was not present physically. The drawings allowed people to get a sense, the emotive sense of what's going on, not just I can hear what this person is saying, but there's a picture. there's emotion that's happening along the way.
Kev, one of my dreams is to have Antoine come up to our annual session at ABCNJ and have him do a sketch notes for the entire day so I can distribute that out. And actually, Antoine, this would be really cool because this year our region report, the whole thing is being called Testify. So the region report is actually going to be ABCNJ on trial. So we're going to set it up like a courtroom scene. So it would be like perfect for you to come and do sketch notes.
When is the session?
It's mid-September, 18th and 19th.
Oh, let's book it. That sounds like fun.
Well, I'll talk about it because we have to figure out a way to get you in there officially. So we'll see.
Well, I think this this whole thing, we've talked a few times about, what you use for your sermon notes, and of course, I my seminary professor would say, "What are you talking about, sermon notes? You shouldn't be using any sermon notes." But I think it comes to the whole point of this digital thing and how a lot of us are going in that direction. And I found it interesting this article that we. Looked at called, the title of it might just be a bunch of link bait, The Case Against E-Readers, Why Digital Natives Prefer Reading on Paper, and even that might be, just the whole premise might itself be a bit suspect possibly, but I was just, this comes from a Slashdot link, and I found it interesting that younger people, some say they're not interested in reading in digital format. They say e-reader. We can quibble over what they mean. I think they're meaning anything that has to do with a, digital format, not just an e-reader, like an ink e-reader. But I would call, the Kindle app on my tablet. To me, that's an e-reader, even though Wes would disagree with me.
No, Kev. I think you're mishearing what I was saying. They're specifically speaking about e-readers as those tablets. they're not considering dedicated e-readers at all. That's why, because one of their big points is the reason why these kids don't want electronic distribution is specifically because of the distraction factor, which means they're focusing entirely on the tablet apps or the phone apps or things like that. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, but to me, there's no distinction between the two. When I say e-reader...
Well, in terms of distraction, there is.
Right, but I'm saying...
In terms of if you want a distraction-free environment, it's not the electronic that's the problem. It's the media they're using to do it.
Yeah, that's
if they're going to use distraction as one of the cases, then that's fine. But you're specifically in a target window saying this is what we mean. That's all I'm saying about it.
Okay, but you seem to say
on an e-ink display, on an e-ink reader, there's no distraction.
Okay, but you seem to say that you made the comment when we were discussing this earlier that you felt like this was a bunch of, I don't know what I can't remember the exact terminology you used, but my interpretation of what you said was that you didn't agree with the study itself because of the fact that they were not including what you consider the valid definition of an e-reader, and that is something like a Kindle or a Nook.
No, I didn't say that at all. I mean, that's not what I meant. My daughter prefers reading print books. So that's anecdotal evidence right there. So I'm seeing this in my own house. But the only thing she has to read on is an iPad, and she hates it because she'll go and do something else. And that's that. And so I'm looking at this and I'm understanding. Yes, this is something that's going on.
Guys, the framing of the article, this Washington Post article, is actually on distraction. I mean, I know it's making this the link bait, and you were right in saying that because it's very much link bait, Kevin. But of the three main points that this article is making, two of them are distraction, which is. Mm-hmm. You know, are really weird. I mean, if I'm going to use the same pedagogy that this article is using, I just invalidated the article by hands and foot. But they're going into the psychology of the preference for non-digital because of distraction, and very not often the second point in here actually has to do with cost of the books. They are actually saying that they see paper books as being a free reading alternative rather than cost for device and cost for service that digital device offers. The article almost invalidates itself. The point, though, you know, might as well be valid. You know, folks prefer to read in print, but I'd prefer to read a paper book too if the digital book did the same thing the paper did and there was nothing else given to it. You know, of course the distractions are going to be a story. If digital looks just like paper, if digital takes digital artifacts and does things digitally that enhance reading for digital space, the preference is almost always going to be for digital until distraction becomes the value point.
I think, though, that you guys are getting too focused on e-reader versus tablet. Listen. I think clearly that has to be a part of it because a Kindle, you're right, does not have any distraction. My wife reads at hours on end, but she hates to read on her iPad, whereas I'm the opposite. I would much rather use the iPad. But, yes, there is some of that distraction, and that's the problem. The point here, though, is that young people, for whatever reason, according to this article, if it's accurate, and my personal experience is that it is, they want to read in a book, a regular physical copy of a book. And for our discussion here, I think that's interesting because I'm of this focus of, it seemed, until I saw this, my attitude was my generation and younger wants digital. We want digital, and so give it to me digital and quit handing me paper and quit giving me books. Whereas maybe that's not, maybe for the church, should we change our attitudes about this based on this. What do you guys think?
That's what I, and so that when I mentioned earlier, John Dyer wrote a very, very excellent piece, I want to say about 2 years ago, I'd have to go dig for it, where he talked about the differences between electronic reading and paper reading. And it was really a light on versus light from reference. And so, like, the very first quote, you know, I'll use in this Washington Post article, I like the feeling of it, Shumbardi said, reading under natural light in a campus atrium, his smartphone next to him. I like holding it. It's not going off. It's not making sounds. When we deal with, when we're talking about the attraction of paper, there is a touch, a tactile feeling. There's also an issue of light. Items that emanate light are inherently distracting. But psychologically, physiologically speaking, we like the sun, we like the sun, we like the sun. We really have a problem dealing with artificial light. And for a lot of folks, especially when you're asking them to do deep reads, you know, preference versus of iPad versus Kindle, for example, a light emanating, bouncing off of a surface, ambient light, reflects better on one's psyche than it does light emanating from the surface, somebody reading from an iPad.
Stuff like that for, like, offices. There were people who are in offices with like, track fluorescent lighting are almost inherently, like, less satisfied in their job and less productive than people who are working in areas with natural lighting. I mean, it's part of the psychology of being human.
Right. And so, but the second part of that light discussion happens to actually do with, you know, sounds and tactile feeling. And so, you know, when we start looking at, you know, preference of a Kindle over, you know, other reading, you know, other e-readers, you know, one of the marketing points that Amazon has been able to do really well over the iPad, you know, Nexus 7 group when it comes to reading is that the Kindle by default, by its design, puts you in a non-distracted space. It can't reach out to the wider internet. It just does Wikipedia. It just does citations from the Times or the Post, etc. The hardware itself is designed to not be as distracting. When we remove that condition, and for electronic reading devices, as Kevin was saying, you know, e-readers plus tablets, the propensity for us to actually have our mind wander and the device to go with us is less possible with a paper book than it is with an electronic book, you know. And so the discussion in the church discussion should probably focus around, are we fostering people to have a spiritual discipline of focus rather than are we debating over paper, e-paper or regular paper? Because focus is not tech tool.
Well, see, that's what, you know, when I talk in church and I talk to my church people, and I actually don't, I actually encourage using your phone or your tablet for your in-church Bible reading. And my purpose of that is because I know the value of it for me, that I'm listening to the sermon, and when I've got someone else preaching or when I'm somewhere else listening to a sermon, and I can see right next to the text, I can see, you know, the ESV study Bible or, you know, pull up a word study. Sometimes a preacher will say something and I'll go, what? I don't know. And so then I'll click, find it and say, okay, that's where he gets this from because he read this. You know, you see what I'm saying? So there's some added depth that I find that I can get here. But if this article is true and people are using their tablet for Bible reading and then the notification goes ding and then they think, oh, yeah, I've got Angry Birds on here. I could use this while I'm listening to the that kind of thing. I'm seeing this because in our youth class at church, we had the internet on in that room and the kids were using their tablets, and they would pull it out and say, oh, I'm using it for my phone, for my Bible. And my policy was, hey, if they're using it for their Bible, you need to let them use it because that's, you know, that's the way kids learn today. That's the way kids work today. And they were looking at me and going, they're not using it for their Bible. And I looked down. He's got, like, the Bible doesn't have things flying through the sky exploding in it, you know, because they were playing video games and lying to the saying they're using it for the Bible. Then they went home to mom and dad. They won't let me use my tablet as my Bible anymore. And then the dad came to me and said, hey, what? That's not fair. These kids, you know, my kids have been trained to use their tablets as their Bible now, and you're basically taking away from them, you know, and I had to say, look, they're not. And, of course, the father was, no, my kids wouldn't do that. And I said, well, you know, if we had some closed-circuit camera to show it, I trust the teachers, and I bet that they are. And
how big are your classes?
The youth class, we might have 15 kids in there.
Yes, yeah, I think what Anton is talking about is, I think, really what we need to go, because it's what the article is doing is doing the classic American, I mean, it's not even a Christian thing, it's just an American thing. Everything is on or off. We always do, binary thinking. It's like, they do this, so we don't do this anymore. And I think really what it comes down to is use case, teaching wisdom, and then moving forward. Because with your idea, and I see this with teachers in schools, you know, well, I let my kids do this, and they're not searching they're not searching the internet. They're playing like whatever game they have on their thing. We need to teach wisdom for that, when you see people abusing it, what you're seeing is sin working its way out, because people will find a loophole in anything that they can do. And if they weren't, for my thing is, if the kids are going to abuse the tablet, it makes it really easy. But man, I mean, think of the old gag of kids. We're sitting here reading our Bible, and then they flip on the other side, and it's like Playboy or something on the inside, and they're flipping through Playboy, looking like they're all pious and studious. I mean, this is sin working its way out. So I think what we need to do is to teach wisdom. And that's the big thing. So if you're distracted with this, this is what we're here for, and if you agree that this is what we're here for and this distracts you, then feel free to go use this. If this is the way that you work and this is the tool that you want to use because you only want to bring one thing to church, and it's actually more distracting for you to have a Bible and the study book and all these other things for that, then bring this. And it doesn't have to be all one or the other. And when people are found abusing whatever tool that they bring, you sit down and teach and be like, listen, here's the deal. It's you're wasting your time by coming in here and doing this. So if you don't want to be here and you want to play Angry Birds, then sit down and talk with your parents, because it's you're wasting your time for that. You're being disrespectful to the person who's trying to give up their time to hang out, you know, to work with you. So that's a whole other issue. And you're not learning wisdom on how to use all these wonderful tools that we're giving you to work out. And I think that's the path. We have to take a long view with this, rather than on or off. That's one of the things that I always struggle with churches when they start rolling out. And we have digital ticket, and we have this. I'm going, guys, what I was talking about. We don't have a theology of this yet. You need to really take a long view in helping people go through with this stuff. I'm a little different, because in my Sunday school class, I have my son who is visually impaired, so an e-book is absolutely essential for him. And then I have another person who is a little bit developmentally delayed, and the e-book actually helps, especially because she can press the button and it'll read it for her. And so this is one of the groups, like I'm teaching a baptism class right now, and they're working from an e-book. It's fascinating to me, because they can do things that kind of help them, where they, I need to do this, and they'll set a reminder, and it'll pop up, and they're like, okay, so they do their baptism homework, and they move through. So it helps them. But if I had, like, 15 people in the class, and, you know, I knew that not everybody was there to really be part, they're just being forced to be there, well, then, yeah, I think I'd want to keep distractions to a minimum. And that's to me, that's part of learning the wisdom of the environment, too.
Antoine, you sent me a link to this. Tell me what it is that we're...
Yeah, no problem. So John Dyer, who of all the people that I've come across in Christendom in my beautifully few short years on this earth. John Dyer is probably the only person I know that is just as much a people person as he is a techie. He's a rock star developer, and he's a rock star. He's a rock star minister. I won't say preacher, but he can teach with the best of them, and he can code his own Bible app. He actually did code the Bible app that the Digital Bible Society uses to send Bibles to closed countries, to give you an idea how cool he is. He's one of those guys, those living legends that I very much admire, and he's one of the few people that I can have this conversation with, and we really come out of it with bearing some really cool actionable steps or good fruit. But what John did in that article, and that was more than just a few years ago, it was 2010, took me a minute to find it. He talked about things that are becoming, you know, challenges or antiquated in our church. And one of those points that he raises there was this idea of light coming from the screen and why it's a distraction. And it's just he doesn't get into the psychology of it. This is something him and I and a few others got into later when we looked at this. But this idea that, you know, digital technologies challenge normative actions. It challenges things that we used to assume that are normal. And, you know, whether that's something as complicated as what he lists here for, you know, number one, you know, you got airplane mode and you got worship mode. You know, some of us are not trained to deal with distractions. We're trained to curtail our lust to being distracted, but we're not really trained on how to deal with distractions. And that's why, you know, a good chunk of the Christian health series deals with how to deal with stress and, you know, how to mitigate bad people around you and how to work with boundaries, etc. He goes on, and I mentioned the point earlier of talking about these light sources coming from your book. And it's really a psychological thing. You know, people seeing swipes versus seeing pages being flipped, because we're used to it. We are literally used to the tactile feeling of people switching a page when we tell them, hey, on page such and such. And when we don't see their hands moving or we don't see them switching a page, we no longer feel that they're communicating to us, that they're paying attention. These are things that, you know, a theology of technology really have to address, but hasn't been addressed in a wide-reaching manner. Thankfully, good folks at Taylor University, Aberdeen Christian, and Biola University are trying to figure out a theology of technology. And what does it mean to be technological, but also not apathetic to, you know, non-digitally enhanced experiences of media and technology? And it's a very difficult discussion because the tools change, and some people do get wrapped into the tools drive the behavior, which drives the theology.
And he froze. Well,
he keeps using
this phrase, a theology of technology. I'm pretty sure I understand what you mean, but explain that so that we make sure everyone knows what we're talking about there.
Well, again, and I go back to John Dreyer because he's really, really, really good, and he wrote that fantastic book, From the Garden to the City. And one of the things that he points out in the very opening chapters of the book is that anytime we use a tool, it actually changes our interaction with reality itself. And he uses the example of, you know, you start planting a garden and you start by having to, before you have tools, you're digging in the dirt. You're touching the earth physically. And that's something that it goes through. But you're limited because, you know, your fingers get sore and things like that. So you find a shell and you realize that you can dig a whole lot faster and a whole lot quicker, but you're one step removed from creation then, or from your direct touch to this creation. And so,
Chrome,
sorry, Antoine,
reboot.
He's asking me about a theology of technology. And so that's one of the things that John points out, is that when we're utilizing these tools, we need to understand that our perceptions, our interactions, and our very understanding of reality changes. And you, I mean, you even with this, Kev. 20 years ago, I don't even know you from a hole in the wall because the technology wasn't there. And yet suddenly, or you know, I would have never met Antoine, much less considered him a friend. Now suddenly, because I have Twitter and Facebook and Google Plus and texting and all these other things, all these tools have come in, my perception of the reality of friendship has now completely changed. To where I have friends like you, who I've never met physically. I've had friends like Antoine, I've only met a couple times. I had, you know, and I have people that I am. They're some of my go-to people to share big news with, who I don't see anymore physically because they live on the other side of the globe, and you know these friendships would have withered with someone with my personality in time. So we need a theology that understands that what these tools are changing the way that we are interacting with the world and the way that we begin to think about God and the interactions with God. I think this is one of the things that we need a regulator, because we have this instant on connection that actually Rudolf Bultmann brought up, right? You can't believe a miracle is an area where you press a button and light turns on. You know, we have that instant-on mentality about things, and so when God doesn't show up right away, we sometimes think that God's not there. But that's because of our perception of reality and utilizing these tools. It's not looking at things from a long-term God perspective. And so this is all part of how this has all got to work into our understanding of being human, our understanding of being disciples. We need to understand that these tools change us, and we know that physiologically, that utilizing these things actually changes our brain chemistry because we're processing information differently. And I think that's important to recognize. It's not good or bad, but it is different. And I think what Antoine was talking about in the idea of distraction, one of the things that I've noticed is that if I sit down with a group of kids and I go, okay, we're going to have a lesson now, they're not there. They're just not there. Between normal, you know, adolescent hormones and then all the other blips and bleeps that we put in, and an opening, our traditional opening prayer, let's sit down and we'll have somebody talk, and then we think, okay, we've opened the meeting properly, right? Completely ineffective. It doesn't slow anything down. It doesn't process. What I have noticed is that when I take an old form of Quaker centering prayer, it's hand, palms up, palms down, and I let them do that for 5 minutes, their entire aspect inside whatever space we're at completely changes, because suddenly for the first time they're present in a way that they weren't before. But see, I need to have a theological understanding of that.
Is that really new just because we're now in this digitally native generation? No. Because every generation has struggled with how do I communicate with this new generation? That's nothing new. That's been going on, you know, probably since the time of Adam.
I'm not even talking about communicating with the new generation. I'm talking about actually getting someone to be present.
Well, but that's essentially communication.
It's a framework for it, but no, I mean, I'm talking about, even with older people, I can't, like an opening prayer, Kev, I don't do pastoral prayers at church anymore, and you want to know why I don't do pastoral prayers anymore? And I'm talking about dealing with like 50, 60, 70-year-olds, I don't do these things anymore, because I actually kept my eyes open one time when I did a pastoral prayer, and if you do that, you will be off pastoral prayers for the rest of your life. Because I had people rooting through their pocketbooks for mints. I had people who were writing down grocery lists or whatever they were doing. I had folks flipping through the hymnal looking for the next hymn. I had someone reading the announcements. Nobody's paying attention because they're not present. And we have done very little to help them be present.
Well, let me interject in peace while my internet is acting good. God dang, it's not going good today. But The Kevin, you asked a really good question there. Is this really new, all of this that we're dealing with? And, you know, honestly, it's not really new. I remember reading some words from Polycarp, who was dealing with the idea of sacramentals and idols, and, you know, folks wanting to have, you know, things to remember Jesus by, and he was basically saying their focus is off because they're focusing on things rather than focusing on the Christ, and him himself going back and forth over his life about that. I don't think it's really new at all. I think, you know, a theology of how we deal with digital is very much going to be found in how we've dealt with other tool and behavior transformations previously. I just don't think that we're having that conversation as openly as the church used to have that. And so it is harder to start with, hey, listen, you have a tablet, you have a book. You know, let's talk about, you know, why this is going to affect us as a community and how this may affect your relationship or your perception of your relationship with the Godhead. And this is what we walk through. You know, and in those discussions, we can have some really positive things happen. You know, one group we talked about, you know, I told them, I said, you know, church has always been mobile. There's no such thing as foreign mobile technology. The church was mobile back when God told Moses to build a mobile tabernacle back in Exodus 7 and 9. And, you know, you watch all the theologians' heads blow up and you watch all the technologists' heads blow up because you realize we're not really dealing with anything new. We're just dealing with new clothing on an old issue. And so
there is nothing new under the sun. I don't know.
I think you're right about, I think we agree this is not fundamentally a new issue. Now it's a new framework of the old issue, and I don't think we're gonna solve it now. I come at this all maybe a little differently, but you know, you talked about your pastoral prayer. Yeah, well, I do pastoral prayers. I keep my eyes open because when I close my eyes for more than a minute when I'm not sleeping, I get dizzy because of an inner ear problem. And my people seem to be praying. So, you know, maybe I just have a better church than you do. I'm kidding.
That could be different. But Kev, you know what we did do is we've changed our format of our prayer to where I have a gentleman who has a real gift for prayer. He gets up and he takes the prayer requests. And we actually, we kind of take a cue from our liturgical brethren and we do like a prayers of the people. And everybody gets to pray. And you know what was interesting after we started doing that? We started seeing answers to prayer.
What does that mean?
Because everybody. Well, it was like people, when people would share the request and the gentleman would lead us in response, Lord, in your mercy, and the whole church responds, hear our prayer. And to watch people, I've had people who share things that they're personally struggling with, they're hurting with, or for.
Let me interrupt you one more time, buddy. I'm sorry about this. I am not at all liturgical, but mimic that for me. Just all right. Let's just say I'll give you a real prayer request. My wife's grandmother has recently learned that she has breast cancer, and because of her age at 90, I think she's 92, doesn't plan to have any treatment for it. Okay, and so we've been praying desperately for her and her salvation, primarily, but also that God will be in her, with her in this. So my prayer is, you know, that God will bring to her someone who can effectively communicate the gospel to her.
Yep. And the gentleman receives that. This gentleman and I, or if I'm there, if I'm leading it, I receive that. If I feel that people didn't hear it, because a lot of times they don't, I echo it, and I say, Lord, in your mercy, and the entire congregation responds with, hear our prayer.
Lord, hear our prayers.
So then you don't have a person, all right, Brother Joe, pray for Janet Roseman. Lord, react now, please.
But I'll tell you, I've seen people who are desperately hurting, and to hear the entire church cry out to God, cry out to the mercy of God to hear our prayer, and I've seen them strengthened just with one simple sentence. And it's fantastic.
You know, forgive my very parochial Southern Baptist upbringing, but this is a common thing everywhere.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Well, it's more common in Orthodox and liturgical churches, Kevin. It's not as common once you start bending Anabaptists.
Although my Anabaptist friends all love it, so.
I've been in just about every type of church imaginable, and you know what both of you speak of is certainly the reality, you know. But the hard thing is indeed focus. You know, there's a spiritual discipline of focus that is missing and being taught, and it would answer, you know, too many questions if, as a body, or you know, we focus the lessons on focusing, right, on how to focus to complete a task, or how to focus, you know, to hear from God. If we focused on those kind of things, you know, a little bit more than we focused on, you know, the symptoms of not focusing, we probably would get a few more answered prayers.
All right. Well, I think we've beaten that one because the lull makes it sound. No one's jumping in, talking over top of each other. Towards the end, we're getting up here on our close to our hour-long issue, but there was one other thing that we kind of wanted to talk about in this social media policy. That's the first thing that I was thinking. Bring that up. Do you have that?
I don't have it on the screen. But it was bringing up the idea that we need churches really need a social media policy to talk about talk about what's appropriate, what's inappropriate interactions, specifically the ones that I would read that were given as examples were kind of governing interactions between adults and minors, and what's mm-hmm. what's actually appropriate. A lot of them, a lot of it had really good suggestions in it. My whole thing, and Anton would agree with me, is that, you know, these things are all cover your rear end. Thing. So if something happens, say, well, we have the policy in place to go through. And unfortunately, in our wonderfully litigious world, we absolutely need that. And so that actually made me spur that you know, my church really needs to have something like that. I try not.
Wes,
Kev?
Have you heard about the Keith Olbermann situation where he's been suspended from ESPN because he told a bunch of Penn State students who were raising money for childhood cancer, and he said that they were pathetic on Twitter, and then they got into a big debate. And so, you know.
And here you're having an example of a long-form no social media policy really regulated him. And unfortunately, that's only part of the story. One of the things, because they had it on Philly.com, they had an article that was talking about the person who actually sent the tweet, who's not a current student. She was an older, an alumnus of Penn State. And what Keith Olbermann said was ridiculous. But she, after the wins had been restored to Penn State, she was, in her mind, she was trying to reach out to him and be like, well, here's another side of the story and look for it. For whatever reason, Keith Olbermann received it as a troll. And a troll, probably as a troll among many trolls that he was getting on Twitter at the time, because Twitter is a very conducive environment for that. And so when he got this, well, what about this? We are, for whatever reason, he received it as a troll, and he committed a cardinal sin. He responded to the tweet and never read the link, because he was making an assumption that this was just yet another troll about, here's the stuff that Penn State's doing and you're stupid, Keith Olbermann. So in his, and Keith Olbermann really, he presents himself as this really erudite person, and I don't care for him, his personality at all. But whatever reason, he just responded with that pathetic thing, and it blew up from there. And he was absolutely wrong to do it. He committed a cardinal sin. And now what, one of the things that people don't go out is that I thought his apology on Twitter was fantastic. And it's, for me, it's, I don't like this guy personally at all, but his apology was him. You could tell it was not legal, wrote it for him. You cannot tell it was going. He said, I was childish. I mean, it was his voice. It was wrong. I am sorry. And he went through. And so that came through. But yeah, if you would have had a nice little social media policy for how to interact with trolls, he wouldn't have been suspended. So that would have been nice.
Well, so let's take this from actionable, here's what I can do with it kind of thing, both from the standpoint of, you know, cover yourself and what can we really, well, let's start with that. Social media policy, let's say a church wants to do this. They say, look, we need to say, if you're a leader in our church and you're speaking about things related to our church, number one, don't do this. What would you say would be number one, Wes?
I would tell them, Wes.
Go ahead.
I would tell them to go to Deuteronomy. I would literally tell them to go to Deuteronomy chapter 6 and use that to build your social media policy.
Okay, but what's number one? Give me number one on the list.
Number one on the list, honor God with every action that can be seen or not seen.
Yep.
That's number one. That's the number one rule for a church's social media policy.
Yep.
Honor God with things that can be seen or not seen. Number two would be make sure that any communication that you transact digitally can be is honoring your brother or sister in the faith.
I like
and in that you cover
number three is anything that you do electronically.
Let's not go too fast on this. I think this is important.
Right.
Let's remember your number two because we're going to get back to it, and then you bring up your number three in a second, Wes. But let's go back to this number one, and that is you said honor God with everything that can be seen and not seen.
Yeah,
I think those are two very important distinctions that people might gloss over, and you may. I don't know if there's a way to make certain that. But you know what?
There's an easy way to say it.
Lots of people who think. First of all, you may have to do some.
What they do.
As to what can be seen and not seen, but I like these, so I'm actually going to write these down in our show notes.
And Kevin, the seen and unseen, I think, is really important because you need folks in churches need to understand their anonymous comments that they make if they go to a website or something, or they make something under a pseudonym or whatever like that. It doesn't matter if people don't know it's them or it's connected to the church. Because they are supposed to be representing Christ at all times. So if they're going to do an anonymous comment and it's going to be a troll or anger or vicious or nasty, then they really, really need to think about long and hard about who they are in Christ.
Good
and
point.
So that's where that seen and unseen comes in hand.
Antoine, give us your number two.
So the number two was... remember your communication. Honor your brothers and sisters in Christ with all your communications, heard and not heard, or seen and not seen. Essentially, it's the same thing as number one. It's just honor your brother and sisters in the faith, with your communications. If we're going to craft a policy, you know, we have to honor and respect one another. You know, the premise verse is it John or Matthew where Jesus says they will know you by the love that you share between one another? And he based that one off of Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 3. Love the Lord your God with all your whole heart.
The first two are Jesus' two greatest commandments.
Yeah, and then, like as you were saying, Wes, after you deal with those, after a policy has those two, after a church's policy or a ministry's policy has those two, we really can deal in the things of, you know, understand that your actions reflect not only on yourself but your family and your church community. You know, so don't put anything online. Don't put anything on a computer connected to the internet that you don't want later to come back and bite you.
All right, so that's a third one that we jumped ahead of Wes on his. So understand that your actions reflect yourself, your family, and your church family. Wes, what would your number four be?
Well, I think Antoine brought it up there is the idea. Anything that you put out on the internet is public. Whether you think it's private, whether you think it's everything is public because it can be retransmitted. So even if it's public or private when you send it, that does not mean it is always going to be so. And that's something that people need to understand. There needs to be, and I like how Antoine started with, again, he started with the theology of it. The two greatest commandments, then the idea of that you're responsible to your family in Christ, and then finally, then you get to the practical aspect of, and by the way, you must be wary of the tools that you are using, because there is always a downside to anything that human beings create.
You know, I would be, you know, again, number four.
Let me interrupt you. Say that again, yeah. Wes. Last thing.
I said there's always a downside to anything human beings create. You know, our sin is that pervasive that even in the greatest of things that we create, there's always going to be a downside to it that we need to be aware of. And that's something that's really something we need that to be part of our understanding of church. Not to be afraid of the tools, but to be aware that even in our seemingly innocuous use of these things, that there's always a cost that goes into that, that if we're not careful, it really can come back and bite us.
Okay, Antoine, I interrupted you. Go ahead with what you were saying.
Yeah, no problem. That's a really good point there. Number five, you know, would be, you know, as in terms of a policy, maintain your own backups of all communication and content.
Why is that?
You know, so one of the really distracting things that happens whenever a church or a ministry is brought to has a summons is that they actually have to produce the communication, or at least a record of that communication. It's literally, if the church, you know, the ministry is going to sponsor a media policy, they also have to sponsor, at least for those communication platforms that the church owns or subscribes to, they have to actually own a copy of that backup with which that they can have to search on that later. And then the user themselves should also be responsible for carrying a backup of that in any case that they are summoned as well. You own your own backups. That part the FCC has been very clear on. What you don't own is the ability to summon somebody else to give you your backups later.
See, that gets into a technological issue that I can see very simple ways to handle it, but I bet the average ordinary person out there would find daunting.
They would, and that's part of our education.
Every time I tweet, have IFTTT back it up to Evernote, or not even just Evernote, but back it up to... I'm trying to think of a way to back it up where it's my copy and not some cloud-based thing, but...
They usually rely on Google, shouldn't.
Here ends up being the... that's totally, you know, whenever I would talk to legal, that's what they would come out with, and IT would say the same thing. I'd say, yes, and it's our responsibility as those who are technically enabled to teach those skills and methods to those who are not. And if they can't abide by that part of the policy, then we can't let them be online representing us.
Well, I'd like to talk more about this. We don't have time right now because I don't think any of us want to go for 2 hours, and I don't think any person watching this would like us to go for 2 hours. Let's plan next week to talk about this concept of how do I back up my cloud so that I've got it instead of relying on Twitter, Facebook, Google+, to keep it all. Because that can get exhausting, to be quite honest with you. If you're incredibly active,
really?
That could be quite exhausting to have to think about all of those different ways. I'm talking about for the ordinary person who doesn't have, you know, someone who's just, you know, they're constantly posting on Facebook and Twitter, or they're constantly posting to Instagram and Vine and things like that. You know, how do I keep copies of all that? But we're not going to do that today. But, guys, this has been an interesting discussion. I actually think that maybe this last one, which when we first started, my thought was that's going to be the most boring thing. I don't even know if I want to talk about it. But it might end up being that was probably the most interesting to me, this social media policy stuff. But thanks for making Theotech what it is. And those of you who are watching, we really appreciate your viewership, and we hope that you'll check us out. We will be posting this online as both audio and video format. If You want to be able to follow Theotech normally, just stop by on Friday mornings at 9 o'clock. Make sure you follow my feed on Google Plus, and you'll be able to do that simply and easily. Or follow Theotech News on Twitter, which it goes to there when we start it. You can also just go to theotech.com, and that'll point you to this and many other interesting church and Bible tech-related content. And we will also let you know how you can follow both Wes and Antoine in all their various forms and ways. But we hope that, most importantly, you'll subscribe on YouTube to this so that we can be in your feed every single week when we do the Theotech podcast. But, guys, I appreciate you being here and being part of this. Thanks.
Thank you.
Appreciate you.
All right. Bye.